And we're challenging, in some manner of speaking, the non-native population of our communities to be, to help resolve our problems, because your problems are ours when you run for office, and our problems are yours, because we cannot be of any more help to you than you are to us.
Well, those have been very thoughtful and thought-provoking presentations. I wonder if some of the folks who would rather speak from their seats. We have a microphone that Eileen can take around. Makes it a little more informal. Why don't you just... take that ray gun down to the back, and is the cord long enough? Perhaps these ladies. That's really a microphone she's got there. I know it looks like a lethal weapon, but. I was just wondering if either of you ladies would like to add something, and
not really. Just here to listen. I got lawyers here. I got Mr. Warren here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a shareholder for Kirkwinny. We both are. We're both shareholders.
You hold it?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask my friend Mr. Warren here a question. After 1991, they say all lands are going to be taxed. I have a house at Klukwan. Does this mean that I'll get title to my land after 1991? Or is that a too deep of a question to answer?
That was David Light.
The Klukwan Village, David, as I understand it, it's in a special, unique category of its own, and it's in September 2, 1957, Senator Jackson, who was a manager of a subcommittee Interior Department, helped pass a law that transferred ownership to the village. Because of that ownership was transferred and was received by IRA Council, which has a constitution, not a charter, a constitution. It prevailed in the Claims Act under what you call prior existing rights. So it's going to take probably a case by case study, because it's unique. It has not only unique in the way it was brought about, it, the potential is yet to be realized. So it's that's something that has to be addressed with a lot of research.
Could I ask you a question, Mr. Warren, just while you're there? How many shareholders are there in Klukwan Inc. altogether?
Well, initially we're at 265. We have about about nine less than that now.
And you said initially 265, so you've got about 254 now.
Yeah.
How proportion of them live in Klukwan, and what proportion in Haines, and what proportion elsewhere?
It's about 50% is up in Klukwan, and about 40 in Haines, and the 10% are scattered.
Mm-hmm. Have they expressed any view to you about their feelings regarding selling their shares after 1991?
I think the subject of selling shares comes about when they feel they have no response from their board member.
Mm-hmm.
There's a measure of mutual communication when that does not exist, and that has happened to us many times, and it may happen again. But when cannot voice their concerns and with adequate response, and they say what's the use of doing anything? We might as well sell. I think that's a major. There are other reasons were given. Some of which ties in with the afterbirth issue. I think the afterbirth issue should be resolved with the help of the state involvement, since they were they fostered the initial idea, and they must carry some obligation to when that became a reality.
Yeah, thank you. I wonder if Mr. Hammond's grandson wanted to offer any views as a young person. Maybe you could give us your name
Well, actually, my name is Tom Jimmy Jr., and I'm a shareholder at large in Haines. And I've been mostly just listening to what's going on here. I'm sorry to say that I haven't been really keeping up with the issues, and so I'm not as informed as I would like to be. But I've been really listening and being really impressed by a lot of the testimonies that were being given by a lot of the shareholders at Klukwan and some of the shareholders that are here. And although some of these things, I have to admit that I've been in association with some other younger people in Anchorage, and maybe some people are familiar here with the special program that was sponsored by the Alaskan Native Foundation. It's entitled the Alaskan Native Leadership Program. Well, there's a lot of people a lot of these younger people from all over Alaska that got together and addressed these issues. And it was really interesting how really similar the concerns are, even taking also into consideration the diversity of Alaska Native people all over Alaska. They're still really similar in our concerns. Well, one thing that really comes to my mind about the 1971 issue about being born afterwards is a lot of different feelings came through me as I was listening to the different testimonies of these people. I had an opportunity to question or to interview some people from Cambodia, these refugees from over there, and how they were infiltrated by the communist countries and the different tactics and strategies they used to come into these countries. Well, when they decided that it was, they didn't want to go in there and take it by force, then they started using politics. And as politics, what they would do is they would go in there and they'd really convince these people that communism would be a really good thing for them. And so after they got a good majority of these people convinced of this fact, then they didn't even have to fire a shot. They just went in there. Or they found that what they were promising them wasn't anything that they were describing to them. What actually in fact happened was that they separated their families and put them against each other. And I feel this is the feeling that I was getting off of this 1971, you know, born after thing, because it's really causes a disruption in the family. Can we really say that the shares that we have, are they really taking the place of the inheritance that we had traditionally, historically, among our own people? I mean, when we stop and consider the kind of damage that these things have done to us, I have a real difficult time trying to understand my grandfather, who I've been growing to respect and love a great deal, because of the things he's willing to take the time and try to teach me these things. I'm 32 years of age now, and I feel like a child in an inheritance that should have been my birthright from the beginning. So in light of all of these different things, I think about the 1991, and should we sell? I mean, I don't even know if this is the question that we should be answering. That's all I have to say now.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mr. Jimmy. I'm sure glad I asked you to participate. Any of you folks seated over here would like to say something? You're welcome to come forward, or yes. Or would you like...
My name is Murray Clayton. I'm from Haines. I'm a shareholder of Clequan and also of Sea Alaska. Okay, first comment on being a shareholder of Clequan. When the land claims first came out, I was my expectations were for to help improve my life, and I feel Clequan has done this. They've provided me with jobs, even though I do have to leave town for that.
To go down to the
Long Island, yeah, our land is not here. And dividends, recently we've had dividends, and it's improved my financial status, and I'm able to get into the fishing industry, which I like doing. And so now I have a way of making a living in Haines, and I feel I can go out to the offices anytime for any problem I have, and they show a concern for us shareholders. And I feel as long as it's like this, which I expect it to be, I'll never sell my Clequan shares. But Sea Alaska is a different story. Yeah, I come from a rather large family. I'm not sure of the count, but there's 20 to 30 of us probably belong to Sea Alaska. And only two of us belong to Clequan. So the rest, I feel, were left out. And especially my mom, she's 76 now, and being Sea Alaska shareholder don't really concern her anymore. And Sea Alaska hasn't had hardly any impact on our lives here. And as far as 1991 goes, way things stand now, I would probably recommend that we sell, which I would rather not, but I just don't think Sea Alaska has been has affected our lives as much as I had hoped for. And also, from following as much as I can, there's probably a move underfoot to take away this right to sell. And I oppose this because I don't want to lose this option. Maybe this will be the only way that Sea Alaska will finally do something that will improve our quality of life for that at-large shareholders. I guess that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Clayton. Tony's volunteering. Yeah, I Would anybody else like to say anything this morning? We thought that what we would do would be to stop for lunch and reconvene at 1 o'clock in case anybody else planned to come over, and just to be here at their convenience. And what we thought we might do is have coffee now, if you would like to stay and have coffee, and then we'll adjourn for lunch and come back at 1 o'clock, and perhaps carry on for an hour or so. To accommodate anybody else, I can tell you that it's helpful to me to put the whole picture together. Each place that I go, I learn something, and it helps me to gain a complete view of how people are looking at this. As Tom Jimmy said, he found when he met all the younger people at the ANF conference that they had a lot in common, that their concerns were very similar, whether they were from Bering Straits or from Southeast Alaska. And I can tell you that the main themes that people talk about everywhere I go are the same: land, subsistence, their heritage, future, the children who didn't get shares, the issue, should we sell our shares, taxation of land, sovereignty. Everybody has a different emphasis, and some places some of the main concerns are the only ones expressed. In other places the concerns are different concerns on that list, but they usually come back to the same thing: land and heritage and the future. Well, would anybody else like to say anything this morning? I've enjoyed this gathering, and yes, sir.
Yes, sir, this afternoon, even the ones that testified, maybe something else comes to their mind if there's time today.
Oh, sure, please. You're all invited back at 1 o'clock, and add anything that you want to what you said this morning. Please do. That's why we're here. Sure, that'll be fine. Well, we'll stop now then, and you're welcome to join us for coffee and donuts or whatever else is back there.
They're back normal.
Back normal. Well, I realize you spoke at Juneau, Roy, but if you wanted to say something now, you're welcome.
Yeah, I might as well, along with it. Everybody else is ready.
Okay.
Yeah. Are we ready? Okay. My name is Roy Clayton. I'm president of the Chilkoot Indian Association here in Haines. I'm a Raven, Tlingit Raven. I've already given testimony about what I think about the Land Claim Settlement Act, but I'll just brush over it lightly for the people that didn't hear me before. One is, I don't think the Settlement Act did the job it was supposed to, and I'm all at large shareholder of Sea Alaska, and I've stated I don't have much faith in that corporation, and there's no way, it seems like, in my mind, to change the management. So I would, thinking about 1991 then, I'll just carry on a little farther than what I testified in Juneau. 1991 rolls along. If Sea Alaska Corporation isn't doing any better than it is now, I would recommend that everybody sell their shares. That's the only way to get rid of it. But I also would recommend that all the shareholders get together and decide, well, let's just divide the land up. 5 acres is better than nothing at all. And get rid of the corporation and the high salaries that are operating it. And as for the children born after 1971, I feel that they should be included somehow, but I don't have any good idea of how. Would be great to help them, but how? You know, if anybody has a good solution to the problem, I would gladly listen. That's just about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Well, we reassembled just for a picture, but we wound up hearing some testimony. Anyone else like to say anything before we really do adjourn? Yeah, we'll we have another witness, folks, so we'll just...
My name is Julie Fulta, and I am the adopted mother of two children who are both shareholders in Sea Alaska, and also an adopted member of the Eagle Clan. It was difficult for us to try to explain to our children as they reached the age of reason in understanding what it meant to be a member of Sea Alaska Corporation, what the advantages of their being a member in that corporation were. When the first money came from the corporation, my husband and I decided at that time to invest that money for the children in some land here in Haines, where they were growing up, that they could identify as their land in combination with the training that they were receiving from the Native community here in their heritage, and felt that that was an important step to make for them, even though they could not legally have a voice in that decision. And as they've grown older, it seems as if that decision is holding more and more validity, because it becomes continually more difficult to try to explain to them that their being a member of Sea Alaska Corporation is a part of their heritage. One of our children is 16 and one is 13, and they probably are not old enough yet to really understand the implications of 1991. Or of the decisions that we as their guardians and parents are making for them at this time, but feel strongly that children learn best when they have something right readily at hand that they can identify with, and that it was our responsibility as their adoptive parents to provide that experience for them, and having them have land right here that they could walk on, that they can pick berries on, that they can sit on and say, this is my place, and this is where I come from, this is where I belong. It's more difficult as we talk about the Sea Alaska Corporation advantages, shareholder advantages, because there is no land for them to identify as their own. The stories that they're hearing from Mr. Hammond's family are important, but it's hard to identify that with being a shareholder. I think that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thank you.
Sir, I have something that I wish to say.
I'm Leo Land, again from Haines. Mr. Berger gave us the opportunity to say something second time, because we have time to do it. And what I was thinking, eventually, if from this study, just for instance, say that the United States government and possibly state Alaska, they will have voice in it, I'm sure, and probably the other states, might ask each shareholder for each corporation to vote on whether to keep their petition Congress to keep their lands so they can't be sold. And there is going to be a terrible responsibility, because every place you go, irregardless if it's native or non-native, any meetings, I don't care where, I've been to many of them, you'll find just a few that are concerned enough to take the responsibility on their shoulders for the other individuals that are younger that will not take the time to do it, even if they have the time. This is well known. So hopefully the ones that have children and they can vote for their children that's under age in Alaska, these groups, that they will do a little studying in the meantime so they know what they're voting for and not just the money, because that's a terrible responsibility. Hi. I had grown children. They're kids to me, 42 in Haines. One's 40, got children, both of them. And one's 32 that's still in Haines now. And they have kids. They don't come to our meetings. And I don't like this. I'm a white man, and I fight for them. But the other groups, it's even the individuals here, is the same shoe that I am. I don't know what you have to do to get people to come to meetings. The Sea Alaska Board gives door prizes now for their annual meeting, and that drew a lot of them in, which is good. And it's terrible when you have to pay somebody to fight for theirself or to get their input. That's all I wish to say. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Land.
First of all, I would like to ask you to excuse me for feeling overwhelmed by the immense issue that's being discussed and perhaps not being as qualified as other people who are here feeling that way anyway to speak. But I did want to add one thing to my testimony, and that is when the Sea Alaska Corporation people were here, we attended those meetings as parents of our children and wanting to try to explain to them some of the decisions that were going to be theirs to make in the future. And it was difficult at that meeting to be able to understand what preparation was being made by the board of directors for Sea Alaska Corporation for the younger members, especially not those who were born after the 1970 to 1971 date, but those children who actually are members of Sea Alaska Corporation and need to have an understanding of what this means. We've tried to help our children understand that their heritage is more than having a share that is a profit-earning part of their culture, that that's a very modern
part of their culture that is really infinitesimal with the knowledge of their heritage and the feeling that comes from being a part of the land where they've grown, where they've come from. And that's so when the board of directors were trying to explain that the Sea Alaska Corporation has not made a huge profit, that they had other things to offer and that people were being encouraged not to sell their shares, we then passed this on to our children, but it's difficult to explain to them why they should not sell their shares, because they have nothing to identify that their shares with. Having a certain amount of profit that might come from Alaska Brick Company is meaningless to a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old, and perhaps to the rest of the shareholders who have a close tie with the land, as many people here in the Haines-Clukwan area do. And I'm sure you've heard this, probably the same kind of testimony from many other people, but I wanted to add my voice to that in saying that we as parents are struggling with the identity that our children must have with this place and the spirituality that comes from living close to the land here that is being neglected by being simply a shareholder in Sea Alaska Corporation. And I was too shy to say that before.
Well, that was said.
Thank you.
That was well said, if I may say so. Thank you.
I got to get my wind first. Ever since I could remember as a small boy, there's always been controversy over our land. Wherever we are, if we're in Sitka, Angoon, Haines, there's always somebody trying to get the land for nothing. And the only compensation we get is leftovers. Now, when a land suit claim came through with $8 million the first time, all the things that were taken from our land wasn't paid for. And when I wrote the last letter to the President of the United States, President Reagan, I told him to make sure that he doesn't touch Indian funds, because the Tsar of Russia had promised us if they sell the land with us, they would continue the good treatment they were giving us. The Russians didn't treat us too good to start with. So when the time came, we killed them off every time they came. Most of the people that were brought over from Russia, from Siberia to be exact, were prisoners. And we hadn't seen a woman for a long time. When they came to our shores to start raping our women, we didn't like that and we cut them down, especially around Sitka and Yakutat. Things like that didn't go with us because our civilization called for good living, square deals, intertribal relationship. And if some tribe made a mistake and started a war, those wars were pretty hard to stop. So you see, we're aggressive to begin with. The Tlingits, the Haidas, the Tsimsheans, the Kwakiutls were always aggressive people, very warlike. And that was the only way we could protect ourselves. Our law was verbal. It was never a written law. So we had nothing to change to suit ourselves. As a small boy and girl, you were taught the Indian law. And you lived by that Indian law all your life. If you didn't abide by that Indian law, you were ostracized as a member of the tribe. And if you had a divorce in your family, your children were treated as slaves. So we had to be careful. Our elders picked our mates. As soon as a girl was 12 or 13 years old, she was ready to marry. And the elders got together. The young men were sometimes given a choice as to which girl they wanted. Very seldom, though. If he was an unruly young man and didn't have enough wits, enough wisdom, the elders would choose the girl for him. And if they were unfit to be married, like if they were mentally unbalanced, they were left alone. They were a widower the rest of their life. So you see, our people had very pure strains. Finally, the Tsar of Russia decided to treat us well. And they began to compensate for what they did by giving us some of our own land back to live on and to give us some of the food they brought from Russia, stuff like crackers and molasses and flour. Was bartered with deer meat and fish. Some of our people were very industrious and furnished the Russian settlement with all the meat they could eat and fish as well. As time went on, the Russians were getting more and more attached to us, and we were getting attached to us, to them. And we began to intermarry. Something wrong with your... We began to intermarry, and the result was we have a lot of Russian breed in Sitka, and also probably a little bit in Yakutat, I don't know. But wherever the Russians were, in California and elsewhere, there's a little Russian blood flowing around. Now, our scientists claim that we come from the Mongolians, but little do they know that we've always been in this continent for the last 30,000 years. I'd say 30,000 years to be sure. And our research shows that we come from the Mayans, the Mayan Indians, and what remnants there are is at, what's the name of that place now? Guatemala. And some of the rockery shows that they're part Egyptians. So actually we come from the Egyptians, and there's a lost tribe from Israel. The 12th tribe, the tribe of Benjamin, is still missing. And a lot of times our elders would say, we must be the lost tribe of Israel because we're a little bit stingy. We're a little bit Jew. And there's little things like that that count up in our favor, because we claim that we're not from the lost tribe of Israel or from the Egyptians or from the Mongolians. We've always been on this continent for time immemorial. And this is why the Indian languages in this continent are different, but they're all related. The closest relative of ours is the Navajo. The next relative is the Hawaiian. The Fiji Islands, some of us call them cannibals, but that's also our people in the South Pacific. I feel personally that these things should be recognized. The scientists should change their song and say where we come from actually. I can't prove that we come from the Mayans, neither can they prove that we come from the Mongolians. The only reason we have Mongolian blood among us is some of them went adrift maybe for the last 30, 40,000 years, maybe longer than that, and have landed on our shores, and we took care of them and fed them and therefore intermarried with us. The Aleuts are our people. The only reason they're small is they interbreed too much. You take dogs and you interbreed them in the same family, they become small. Pretty soon you have nothing but a Chihuahua. So it is with the Aleuts. The Eskimos are our people also, but they've been remote from us. We call them Hatakwan because they're so far away from us. We very seldom see one, and we very seldom intermarry with them. So it is, like the Egyptian says, the Egyptian Pharaoh, so it is, so shall it be. That's the way we feel about those people around us. The people from Canada are directly related to us, especially the ones we call Kunana. Strange people is Kunana. And for a long time we hadn't got acquainted with them. But since the flood, a lot of them would mix up with us around the Ketchikan area. The Tsimsheans and the Haidas were together according to the stories that we have about Noah's flood. I understand scientifically there have been about three floods, but Noah's flood was the last one. So we know the stories about those. Uncle Austin Hammond could tell you stories about the flood. And this indicates how long we've been in Alaska. I could say 30,000 years. But those stories prove that we've been here for time immemorial, like Noah's flood on up. We know how people were saved during Noah's flood.